I am honored to have George Buza on the phone. You, my friend, have had an amazing acting career. You've been on the legendary Canadian TV show Red Green, Maniac Mansions, and a show that was huge in my childhood, Read All About It. You've also are a well-known voice actor, and you've appeared in cartoon series like Star Wars Droid, Star Wars Ewoks, and you are best known for your voice as Beast and Dr. Henry Hank McCoy in X-Men. You're appearing at Stratford Comic-Con this Saturday at the Arden Park Hotel from 10 to 3. Welcome to the show, George.
Well, thanks for having me. Very excited about coming to Stratford.
Now, you mentioned you've been here before. Were you in a play, or were you just here to check out the festival?
No, I was actually at the festival back in 1980.
Really? What did you play?
I played John Dory in Wild Oats.
That's fantastic. George, how are your memories of being in the festival and being in Stratford?
Oh, it was great. I really enjoyed my time there. I lived with above Butch Blake in his garage. I made some really good friends there. I had a wonderful time.
That's awesome, George, and we're looking forward to having another wonderful time when you're coming back this weekend. So let's get into your career. How did you get into voice acting?
Well, it happened when I was still doing theater back in the mid-70s, and one of the actors I was working with in a show had already established himself as a voiceover guy. And he said, "You got a good voice. I'll introduce you to some agents." And I booked a local commercial and met some casting agents and found myself an agent that represented voice actors, and off I went.
It kind of exploded from there, eh?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it was a good time to be starting out, because that was the time when TV, film, theater, everything was kind of blossoming in Toronto. And it just exploded.
Yeah, it's all, your resume blew my mind. Like, you're part of the whole Marvel universe. What's that feel like?
Well, it's very exciting, because I was a fanboy when I was a kid. And when I got the audition call for X-Men, they called it Project X, because they wanted to keep it a secret. And I'm reading the lines, and I'm going, well, they've given away half the title already, because this isn't Project X, this is X-Men. And I kind of got very excited, because this was something that I was introduced to when I was about 11 years old, 12 years old. And I bought the comic books, and I read them, and to be able to play it as an adult was kind of like a dream come true.
Now, George, how does it work when you're voicing for a cartoon? Are you in studio with a partner that's in the scene with you, or do you record them on your own? Do you record from home? Is there a producer? How does that all work?
Well, back when we started doing X-Men, the first season, we did it almost like radio drama. The whole cast was in the room together, and they would just have to turn the microphones off between everybody's lines, which turned into a very long, tedious process and kind of defeated the whole purpose of spontaneity and being able to play off of each other. So they discontinued that, and we went in either individually, or if you had an intimate scene with another actor, they would do it two at a time. But now, many people record from home. I go into the studio, because I haven't renovated my home to be a professional voiceover studio.
Okay.
But I go in solo, and everybody is recorded through Zoom. When we did the original X-Men, it was all recorded on cassette tape and sent down to Los Angeles by courier.
That's crazy.
But these days, you have the TV screen, and then the director is visible, and then you have a bunch of black squares, which are producers sitting there listening to you. And then they shut off everything between takes, and they have a little conference, and then they come back, and you either move on or you redo what you just did.
Can it get tedious? Can you?
No. It never really gets tedious. Tedium is when you're doing a 16-hour day on a movie set.
There you go. Well, I wouldn't know about that. It can get long, can it, when you're sitting around and you're waiting for your time to get on camera?
Oh, yeah, and then you're waiting for weather, and you're waiting for the scenes to be finished before they get to you. I mean, I'm quite used to it, because I've been doing it for so long, but when you're doing animation, and they're really zipping right along, I finish a session in about an hour.
Have you ever said something in, let's say, an elevator or something, and somebody turns and looks at you and kind of has figured out what voice you are or who you play?
No, that hasn't really happened. Not from... Occasionally, if people recognize you from seeing you on TV, that's one thing. But from talking in an elevator or something, no, it's never happened.
Does it take you long to get into character for X-Men, or are you ready to rock and roll the minute you walk in? Do you have any preparations you do with your voice beforehand?
No, no. I mean, I try and make sure that I'm clear of any kind of hoarseness or whatever. You know, if I've got any kind of nasal problems, I'll chew on a Halls or something. But in terms of prep, basically, I just walk in and rock and roll right into the character. I've been doing it for so long, and he's so close to my own personality, which usually when you get cast as something, you find that there are a lot of similarities between you and the character that you're portraying, which is why they've cast you.
Absolutely, yeah. Is there a lot of room for you to ad-lib, or is it basically you pretty much stick to the script?
No, you stick to the script. I mean, they've got such wonderful writers down there that to presume that you can do better than them, I think, is insane. You know, the words that we're given to say are really, really beautiful, and the stories are fabulous. So to be that presumptuous that you could do better than that is kind of stupid.
Absolutely, I guess. I never really thought of it like that. Now, you said you were a fanboy from back in the day. Do you watch all the movies now? Do you sit, like, let's say an X-Men movie comes out, do you critique it because you're in that universe?
No, really, I try to enjoy it. Once you start critiquing it, then you kind of defeat the whole purpose of watching the movie. You go to these things so that you can lose yourself in the story. The last X-Men movie that I saw that I truly enjoyed was X-Men First Class, which gives the whole background story of all the characters at the Xavier School for Gifted Children. And it kind of focused on how Beast became the character. And I really, really loved the treatment that they gave that story.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, it was a good one. I also enjoyed that one.
The one I really didn't like, and they're probably going to be blowback from this, is Wolverine and Deadpool.
You didn't like that, eh?
I did not like that one bit.
Do you want to dive in as to why, or did you want to just leave it there?
I just want to leave it there. It didn't do anything for me. It was just a bunch of gratuitous violence and swearing.
Yeah, it wasn't really for the kids, was it? It wasn't bringing the kids into something that we grew up with.
No, and it really wasn't a good story either, I thought. It was just kind of gratuitous bloodletting and violence.
And, yeah, absolutely, George. I'd be remiss. I have you on the phone. I got to ask you about a Canadian TV show you're on. I was a big fan of it as a kid. You were a recurring character on Red Green.
Yes.
And what was that like to work? Did you know when you were on that show that it was going to be this Canadian iconic comedy that it is today?
Well, by the time I got on it, it already was. I mean, they were bringing busloads of people in from Iowa and all over the U.S. Midwest to sit in the audience, and everything was done in front of a live audience.
And so
we knew already that show was huge. I mean, the fact that it ran as long as it did, you knew that it had a big following.
Absolutely. Like, I was a member of Possum Lodge as a kid. That's how into that show I was.
You know, the funny thing is that out of all the things that I got recognized for, I probably got more recognition for the brief time I spent on Red Green than anything else.
It's funny because I was going to ask you a question about that next. I was going to ask you the strangest thing you've ever been recognized for. Not that being a Red Green is strange, but like I'm like, because I read your MDE, I read everything you've done, and one of the ones that excited me the most, and I'm sure you were on The Littlest Hobo.
Yes.
And has anyone recognized you from that? And what is the strangest thing somebody's went up to you and said, "Hey, I saw you on"?
Well, Read All About It, which was one of the very first things I did in television way back in, like, the mid-70s. And people are coming up to me about that performance, which I actually really forgot about.
It was such a big part of my childhood. They played it in my class.
I realized that, yeah. It became a very big learning thing for schools and everything, and that's probably why people still remember it.
I was showing my younger coworker today.
This thing with Jeff Hislop.
Yeah, okay.
He had a kids show, and somebody brought in a screen capture for me to sign at one of the cons. And again, that was something that I completely forgot about. Bug Killer Jake was the character that I played, but it was misinterpreted as Big Killer Jake.
Oh my goodness.
And everybody was all, can't remember the name of the show. But again, it was one of those kid shows that, you did an episode of it and you forgot about it. And next thing you know, somebody's got a screen capture that they want you to sign at the show.
That's fantastic. Now, speaking of shows, signing things, you're in Stratford this weekend. What can fans coming to meet you expect?
Well, I don't know. I've been to another one of these shows that David Wildstar has out in Oshawa, and they're a mini Comic-Con. We're there to meet the fans and have chats and take pictures, sign autographs, tell stories, and we're just happy to meet people from all over to see, what they think of what we've been doing.
Well, I know wrestling is a big part of these shows. Are you a pro wrestling fan?
Well, I really was when I was a kid, and over my career, I've worked with a lot of wrestlers. I did a recurring character on a Canadian wrestling show called Learning the Ropes.
Really?
That was Lyle Alzado, and they used to have guests that were professional wrestlers. And my character was the Baron of Bucks.
This is awesome.
And his gimmick in the ring was smacking people with a sack full of pennies. But I also did wrestling episodes on Maniac Mansion, where I worked with Dewey Robertson, who was the missing link from the early 60s.
Yeah.
And then on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, we did a wrestling episode where we worked with the Hart Brothers.
Oh, my God.
Brett and Owen Hart.
That's amazing. You worked with the Hart Foundation.
Yes. And their dad was the referee in the ring.
That's so cool. So wrestling's a part.
I worked with all three of them on one episode.
Did they teach you any moves?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. We had an entire day of training. And we really learned that it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a painless event.
Absolutely not, no. And did they put you in the figure four or anything like that?
All the holds, and they clothesline me. I was basically the foil in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Anything that would explode, any invention that would fail, that Peter Scolari came up with would fail in my face. There wasn't a show that I didn't spend in front of an air cannon, having foul things spewed at me, exploding spaghetti, vegetables, slime, you name it. But when it came to the wrestling episode, I was the one that got clotheslined. I was the one that got bounced around in the ring, jumped on.
That's absolutely fantastic. I'm a huge wrestling fan, so when there's wrestling involved, I have to ask. And I could ask a billion questions about the Hart Brothers. That's just an amazing tale. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, well, we also, on Quest for Fire, the entire tribe that I was in was made up of wrestlers.
Really?
The Great Antonio, Giant Haystacks, Adrian Street. These were all the guys that were in the Cannibals.
And they were, and that's so amazing.
And the Mongols, Butch and Danny Blake.
Wow, so you watched as a kid, but you're kind of like part of it now.
Oh, yeah. I got bounced around by the best of them.
That's absolutely amazing. Are you going to get into the ring this Saturday?
Not in my age.
No, not at all. Well, George, I just want to thank you so much for joining me, and I'm looking forward to seeing you this Saturday.
Well, me too. Thanks very much for having me on the show, and let's hope a lot of people show up.
Absolutely. It was packed last year, and I'll be there again this year, and I know a lot of other people are excited for it as well.
Terrific. Looking forward to seeing you all.
Absolutely, George. Have yourself an amazing day, and thank you for your time.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.